It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming to you live for the Build 4 Tough Studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. And wherever you are on the free Odyssey app, good Thursday morning. A feel-good Thursday because tomorrow is the big feel-good summer Friday of the year, and we will not be here for 4th of July, but July 3rd, and things with the baseball teams could have been totally a disaster. Obviously, for the Yankees, it's still a very rough one, but the Mets come back in the second leg of the doubleheader and show some offense and show some fight and get a win. So we'll get into all of that. The Knicks finally naming Mike Brown the head coach. When they fired Tibbs, were they thinking Mike Brown? No, probably not, but they ended up on Mike Brown. So we will see. As Rick Pitino said when he was on with BT and Sal, whoever got this job was going to have the most pressure on him than any Knicks coach in his lifetime since he's been a Knicks fan as a kid. And that's exactly what it is. And oh, by the way, when you go through a draft and you go through a free agency and your choice number 7, don't you think that rotations and decisions and a lot of that is going to be coming from up top? Mike Brown has got a lot of experience, a lot of respect in the league. I hope this works out. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Jay. And I was reading this morning, one of the writers was talking about how this could be akin to Joe Torre taking over the Yankees from Buck Showalter. Maybe, maybe not. We'll have to see. But it's a safe pick. It's not a pick that is wrought in controversy by any stretch of the imagination, other than the fact that we still don't know why they fired Tom Thibodeau. They've been building the roster. They have a much better bench, it looks like, right now, considering that they added two valuable pieces that are going to come off the bench. I think he is inheriting a team in a conference where there will be enormous expectations. And there will be pressure. Pressure is a privilege in this case because he doesn't have a bad team. He has a good team that he's inheriting that went all the way to the Eastern Conference Championship. So am I overly elated about this like I was about Mike Sullivan coming to the Rangers? No, I'm not. I mean, I'm just, what I am is like, let's see what he can do. I'm not against it. I'm certainly not going to go against all the experience that he had with LeBron James early on in LeBron's career, his experience with Kobe Bryant, the fact that he's been a head coach in 4 different places. It's all a part of the NBA package. That this is what happens. I don't want to use the word recycled, but it kind of feels that way to me, but it also feels that they wanted a guy with experience. They didn't want somebody that didn't have any experience. And at least I can sit here and say that his over 700 wins, the success that he had with LeBron, the respect that he has in the league, kind of reminds me of hiring Tom Thibodeau.
Yes, now they're different, right? So it feels almost lateral in a sense. Different type of guys, different type of philosophy. Obviously, Tibbs is a little more of a grinder, not from a work ethic standpoint. He's just, always basketball. He holds himself up in a hotel room and doesn't talk to anybody. And I think Mike Brown's got a little more stuff going on in his life. And I think that kind of helps when you're a head coach, able to relate to the players. But it does feel lateral. I mean, if you go through the resumes, they are very, very similar. Now, Tom Thibodeau wasn't on a bunch of staffs that won NBA championships like Mike Brown was. And Tibbs didn't go to a finals, I don't believe, where obviously Mike Brown did with LeBron. But yeah, it's a similar guy. Now, the things that I really love about it is the experience. I mean, and we're talking top-level NBA pressure experience, yes, that he has. Yeah. So when we ask for that in a situation like this, we don't want a first-time head coach. When we ask for that for the Jets and we didn't want a first-time head coach, this is the type of guy that you want, is someone who has been there, hasn't had the ultimate success as a head coach, but he's been there. The thing I don't like about it, though, is I really believe that because Leon Rose, whoever else, Jim Dolan, had a problem with the way Tibbs was doing things, that when Mike Brown is hired after all the, I mean, unless something big happens here, but most of the offseason is done for the Knicks, that if things are not going exactly the way they want, there's going to be a lot of influence from the front office, and that just creates a bad environment of like, you're not playing this guy enough. You're not playing that guy enough. We didn't bring you in here to sit that guy. So I just hope the collaboration between these guys, because I don't know the previous relationship. Tibbs and Leon Rose had a relationship for years and years and years prior to this. So I just hope that this relationship is collaborative and not like I'm going to tell you what to do.
I mean, part of me feels like World Wide West has got his fingers all
over this thing. Yeah. I mean, whoever.
And that's fine. I mean, look, he's going to be under enormous pressure. I don't know how much different his system is. You know, they all play pick and rolls. I don't know what, you know, his demand level is, which is going to be really important. By the way, he is inheriting a very good group of guys. And we've liked the team. We like the way the team has been built. I think we both like the additions here this offseason, free agency-wise. I mean, I know that listening to Evan and Tiki yesterday, they were talking about there was a potential that they were looking at Ben Simmons. And I'm like, you know what? I think we got serious people here now. I think we got serious players here. I think we have players like Jordan Clarkson and Yabusele who are going to understand their roles. They're going to be serious NBA off-the-bench players that are going to try to help this team get over the top. I just want serious players. I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, you know, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking. And I hope that by adding these two guys, by adding Mike Brown, that the dynamics will change a little bit because they'll play the bench more. That's what I'm assuming. That's probably the biggest knock against Tibbs when he was fired. But again, like I said, yes, lateral move, but experienced, which is a good thing. Now it's a question of whether or not he's that much different than Thibodeau when it comes to offense and defensive strategy, systems, how they play, and then how they react to the way he is teaching them or the way he is coaching them to get what he wants out of them and where he sees the need for improvement.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of falls in the middle of the home run hire and then the crazy hire, because we had talked about both of those things. Like, the home run hire would have been to bring in Jason Kidd or get Jay Wright to come here or something like that. You know, the crazy hire would have been the Dawn Staley or a that guy, Micah Norry, who has never been a head coach, and he had to sound like he was from the South. Those things would have been the nutso hires. And this falls in the middle, closer to the home run than the nutso. But it's the same. It is. It really is the safest hire, you know, which I'm encouraged. I'm not thrilled. I'm encouraged. But as far as the Ben Simmons thing, before I forget, they are clearly trying to find a point guard with experience to come in and run the offense when Jalen Brunson is on the bench, because they want to give him more time during the regular season to maybe rest, and they probably want to, you know, Deuce is a guy who loves to shoot. They're looking for, like, Russell. They looked at Russell Westbrook and Ben Simmons, which are two guys who can't shoot but can run an offense and have NBA experience. So those two guys I don't want on the team, but what I'm pulling from that is that's what they're looking for. They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench, and or if he gets hurt and they need to make sure that someone competent can be out there the whole time.
And, you know, if this whole thing is built around playing more players off your bench and less time on the court for the starting five, then the numbers for the starting five are going to be going down.
Yeah, I mean, that,
you know,
that
the points, the rebounds, the assists, all the numbers that everybody looks at, could there also be a lack of an all-star player on the team? Because if you want to play guys more, well, I mean, depending on how much more. What are we talking about?
Yeah,
like 3 minutes a game?
Yeah, I don't know. And I do believe if Tibbs had the bench that the Knicks have going into this season, he would have played more guys on the bench. He didn't have those guys. You know, when you had DiVincenzo here, you had Hartenstein here, those guys were playing. And I know some of it was dictated by injury, but those guys were playing. And also, on the flip side of, you know, the starters not getting as many minutes, if you think about it, I mean, it really impacts Mikal Bridges the most because he hasn't had that big payday yet, where you got Jalen Brunson got paid, Karl-Anthony Towns has a contract, OG Anunoby has a contract, so Bridges is the one guy there. But what it also does is gives guys on the bench opportunities to showcase themselves when they hit the free agency, like Isaiah Hartenstein did, and he cashed in big with the Oklahoma City Thunder. So,
and by the way, I mean, you know, they're sitting here. You know that Bridges is going to want an extension right now. And I think the max that they can give him is like 4 years, $150 million. I mean, you traded all these picks for him. And now he's here, and I, you got to believe his agent is in there saying it's time for an extension.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so that's another issue that you're dealing with right now that, you know, you probably have, you know, moved away from just a little bit so you can get the coach hired, you can get some free agents hired. And the question is, do they give him the extension and, or do they move him? Because you can't just let him go to free agency and not get anything for him.
Well, I mean, I would give him an extension if it wasn't the max right now. I don't think you can give him the max. He wasn't a max player for the Knicks last year. Great couple of defensive plays back-to-back in the Boston series in games one and two. You know, sometimes he would be finding that mid-range jumper and it would be the instant offense for them. But, I mean, you, if you're giving him the max, that's that to me is
a
mistake.
I'm just telling you what the player's thinking. I'm not saying that's what you should give them. I'm just saying this is what the player is going to be wanting. You know, it's the NBA, man. You know, all these players want huge dollars. They want their future secure, and I'm totally down with the way that they're thinking. I'm just telling you that's the way they're thinking.
Yeah, and just like, but does it mirror the Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson discussion about
different sport, different contractual rules, and you know the Jets do not have to give those guys.
Well,
the Knicks
don't have to give Mikal Bridges an extension. They don't have to.
They don't have to, but he's also going into the final year. Like the Jets still have control by picking up the fifth-year option, and then they can also tag the players. You know, the NBA, you don't do that.
Right. But just in the similarities, I think, start and end with the fact that, you know, this is a guy who wants a contract extension to not go into a lame duck year, and they don't have to do it. You know, that's really the comparison. So, I mean, they might be getting pressure from the agent, but they don't necessarily have to do it. And if I'm on the Knicks side, I'm like, listen, I got to see more if I'm going to end up keeping you here for a long period of time.
Basically, you know, I'm not comparing him to the type of player that I'm going to talk about. But there were two players in particular in baseball, Aaron Judge and Pete Alonso, who did go to free agency.
Yeah.
They did allow them to go to free agency, and then they re-signed with their teams. For different reasons. Aaron Judge could have went to a myriad of teams, and Pete Alonso didn't seem to get the offers that he thought he was going to get. So they both returned to their respective teams. As far as Mikal Bridges is concerned, that is an issue. That is going to be an issue for the Knicks. You know, I'm not saying it's ugly. I'm just saying it's going to be an issue for the Knicks because you got to believe that the player is thinking that, you know, it's time. It's time for me to get my extension.
Yeah, no, sure, and that'll be probably the next order of business for the Knicks now that they have gone through most of free agency and hired their head coach. Now,
this is interesting, right? They hired him when we left yesterday. We thought he would be hired today we left.
Yeah, exactly.
But he got hired earlier, so that, which is good.
But that doesn't. But are they going to do a press conference today? No, probably not. No, they're going to wait till the 4th of July holiday and all of that stuff. So, but I mean, all right. So, are they going? Did they announce a press conference? And will that press conference include Leon Rose? Because we predicted this weeks ago that if they didn't speak before the new head coach announcement, that the entire press conference was going to be about why you fired Tibbs, because you haven't spoken yet. So like a real PR, and Leon Rose may go and hide again, I don't know, and it might just be someone else introducing Mike Brown, I'm not sure. But this is why a good PR person would say, all right, we got to get out in front of it, we got to talk about it, we have to close the book on that so we can open the next one, because that book is still open on Tibbs. No one has said anything about it. What the hell happened there? Why you fired him? Now you're going to introduce the next guy and try to move on and say, all right, this is the right guy. But every single person in that room and reporter is going to be asking questions about the previous guy, which just starts the whole thing off on a weird footing. So
again, a good reason why to hire an experienced guy that can sit up there and sit at least on some of the success that he had in the NBA. If that were an assistant coach that had not been a head coach before, we could have had ourselves, you know, like one of those crazy press conferences where we all just would have walked away and said, "What did they just do?"
Yeah,
I mean, that's not the case here. This is an experienced guy who's been around the league. He's in his mid-50s. He should be able to handle anything that comes his way from a press conference. And by the way, he had nothing to do, as far as I'm concerned, with the firing of Tom Thibodeau. They fired Tom Thibodeau, and the next thing you know, unless there was something nefarious going on behind the scenes, which we haven't heard about, I mean, he's an innocent bystander and all of that stuff.
Sure.
And his focus has now got to be the future, not the past. The future of the Knicks, not the past of the Knicks. Like, he may want to refer back to some of the great Knicks of yesteryear, of course, but I think he also has to be realistic and say, look, I got a really good team here. My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Yeah, and the things that you need to see from Mike Brown, we've talked a lot about the bench playing and those things and the rotations, whatever, but it's really unlocking the full potential consistently of Karl-Anthony Towns. That is the biggest thing that this team needs. If he can be more consistent offensively and defensively, turns into more of a championship player, and Mike Brown is able to do that with him that people really haven't quite gotten to do yet. They get him there. He's so talented. He's so good. It's bits and spurts. But then when it comes to these really big moments, he's not there. So I think his tenure here is going to be defined by that more than anything.
I'll tell you one thing. Out of all the people that have come in here over the last 30 years, I'll say 30 years, Mike Brown inherits the best team the Knicks have had. And the most thorough team that the Knicks have had, assuming that they add another legitimate point guard to be able to run the offense for maybe 10 minutes a night. So most coaches that have come in here have had awful rosters, bad dynamics, ownership that was in their ear, fans who were completely unhappy. This particular situation is maybe the best situation a Knick coach has ever been in since Jeff Van Gundy took over.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the best roster for sure, but is it, but it's also comes with the most pressures. You can look at it two different ways. I mean, Mike Brown's going to look at it the positive way.
Well, I'd much rather have it that way, man.
Yeah, no, of course, but it also means like there's, like when you're a team that has no expectations and you build and you exceed those, like that Knicks team that first went into the, they played the Atlanta Hawks in that first round series. It was like okay, you're building towards something. Now you build, what you've built towards now is an NBA Finals appearance or bust. So that's where he's got to go. But of course, you're looking at it like this is a great, great team that I am taking over. This is one of the most talented teams in the league that
coach. In the Eastern Conference, definitely.
Well, yeah, they still are. I could make a case they were the third best team in the league. Actually, they were. They were the third best team in the league last year. So,
but the Western Conference is like an arms race out there. You know that, and I know that. So you just got to worry about the East right now. Just got to worry about getting through, Milwaukee now, Eddie Miles Turner. I don't know what Cleveland's, they haven't done much.
No.
Boston's basically, looks like they're punting on the season. I mean, there'll be some improved teams. I think Orlando's maybe improved.
Yeah, Orlando's going to be a pain in the neck.
Atlanta may be improved a little bit.
Porzingis. And Detroit's, we saw them up and coming.
Yeah, but they're not doing all that much either. I mean, so you have by far, to me, I'm gonna say by far is probably a little bit too extreme. I would say that right now, I think they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. They have to be with these additions to the bench and with the returning starting five and the other two, Mitchell Robinson, assuming he stays here, and Miles McBride. Why wouldn't I think that they can't be the number one team in the Eastern Conference right now? Give me another team. Indiana?
Not without Halliburton, right? And Turner's gone. No, I mean, to me, it's Cleveland. I mean, it's Cleveland.
What about the Bucks with Miles Turner and Giannis?
I don't.
And supposedly Giannis wanted Miles Turner.
No, he did, but he wanted him. He didn't. Yes, that was. We mentioned this yesterday that it almost backfired on them in a sense. If Giannis was upset, he's like, "I want Miles Turner, but I didn't know it was going to take this to get Miles Turner." But anyway, we talked about it yesterday. But I don't think that I'm not as I sit here today scared of Milwaukee. I'm more scared of Orlando than I would be of Milwaukee. To me, it's Cleveland for sure. I mean, they won over 60 games last year, for God's sakes. No one's even talking about it.
And they beat the Knicks pretty regularly.
Yeah. So I mean that right there has got to be. You got to give them credit heading into this season, even though it ended terribly against Indiana, like it ended terribly for the Knicks against Indiana. But yeah, I mean, they're right there. Bottom line is they are right there.
If they stay healthy, they're right there. They're the best roster that they have had in 20 years.
Yeah, easy to say for sure.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network on this Feel Good Summer Thursday, July 3rd, the pinnacle of the year when you live in the Northeast around here. And, you know, Jerry, I love to suck off this area, and this is the time that we're going to suck it off. Because
that's fine,
because
they sucked you off for the last 2 months.
July 3rd, July 4th, the weather looks good.
It does.
So we're going to be having a great time over the next couple of days. All right, what's going on over there with you, man?
Well, we are brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. You guys went through the hiring of Mike Brown for the Knicks. I will have some reaction throughout the course of the morning. It's just going to take some time to gather it. The one that I did hear that was, I think if you're a Knicks fan, you would like to hear. This is Mark Spears on ESPN relaying a chat he had with Brown before being named the head coach or accepting or getting the job.
I asked him when he first talked to him, I was like, man, there's a lot of pressure that comes with this job. This is a different kind of job. He said, I love it. I want this. And so I think the Knicks, they're getting somebody where all the laughing is stopping. They got a quality head coach who's been through all the battles and is going to walk in and command respect.
So there you go. There's your new guy.
And he's already leaking.
He's already leaking.
Yeah, he leaked to this guy.
But that was before, though.
Yes.
That was like during the process.
Hey, you got to tighten it up now. Let's go. No more leaks.
Tighten it up. Four times.
That's the one thing about hiring a veteran head coach. They do have relationships.
Yeah.
Off the court with media.
Been around a long time.
Players and stuff like that. So, well, he'll learn. I think he'll learn how the Knicks do business now.
Yeah, so you run and hide, no matter what.
They didn't have to hide. They don't talk, other than after games.
Yeah, true.
So, should work out.
Fan engagement's really top-notch.
Fan engagement. But have we seen a press conference date?
I have not. I was looking for it this morning. I have no idea. It's got to be Monday or Tuesday. Yeah,
you would think. Also from the NBA, the Lakers coming to terms with free agent center DeAndre Ayton, Spencer Dinwiddie signing with the Hornets. All right, we get to the baseball story. I'm going to start up in Toronto first because this was a wild night. Fair to say, things did not start well for one Will Warren at all.
Here's Davis Snyder, right-hand hitter, 208. One homer, five runs batted in. Not a real big guy, and he drives one deep left center field. Going back, and it's out of here. Wow, what a blitz by the Blue Jays. A two-run jack by Davis Snyder. 7-0 before you even had your first beverage.
First inning, 7-0. Now, they would lead at one point 8-0, but here came the gritty Yankees. And late in the game, in the top of the eighth.
2-2. Pitch from Garcia. Breaking ball, swing on, driven deep to left, and there it goes. Aaron Judge, hey now! Second deck. Ties this game up at 9-9.
How about that?
So yeah. That was crazy last night. This was nuts.
So if he didn't bring back the hey now on that home run, it was officially dead.
That is right. He did bring it back, and it was 9-9, and you felt, I think if you're a Yankee fan, you felt pretty good that they had tied the game after being 8-0 down. Enter Devin Williams in the eighth inning because the Blue Jays had the top of the order coming up.
And now it's time for him to melt down.
Well, and he kind of did. He gets the first out, then he walks George Springer. Mm. Springer steals on the first pitch. Ben Rice was catching. Steals on the first pitch, takes second. Intentional walk of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Sack fly by Al's favorite guy, Alejandro Kirk. Mm. Runners second and third and two out. One out.
Go ahead, run at third.
Two out.
Guerrero, he's at second. Mm. And Rice got to be real careful. Ah, geez, right there. And a wild pitch. Springer scores. 10-9.
And then
that's a killer.
Yes, it was.
That is a killer.
And then Barger with the it was a good pitch, but slaps it to left for another base hit. 11-9, and there's your final.
I mean, you know, the thing is that for the Yankees, whether it be Volpe, Rice playing catcher in a spot like this, he's got to stop that ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I do agree. It's a bad pitch, but I do agree.
No, they
I
have to stop it. That's part of their thing. They got
Dave Sims said that Rice has got to be careful here.
I agree. I'm with you. He probably should stop it and
they don't. They don't want to put what's his name Echeverria in there because he's going to have a catcher's interference or something.
Scary, you mean?
Echeverria.
Yeah, I mean that would be. Man, they've had catching issues now. They've had fielding issues.
Bullpen issues. Starting pitching issues.
Just keep going. They got a lot of issues.
And they're walking too many guys.
Now, who has more issues? The Yankees or the Mets?
I mean, the Mets have had offensive issues, starting pitching issues. The Mets.
Injury issues.
Yeah, I think the
Toronto
Mets.
Toronto has now caught the Yankees.
They are tied.
Although the game did end on a Pete Alonso last night, clean toss to Edwin Diaz. So that's a plus.
We're getting there.
He didn't throw that one into the dugout, which I thought might happen.
That is true. And by the way, the Rays a half game behind because they did beat the A's last night. So we're all bunched up atop the AL East. Here was Ben Rice on that wild pitch.
That's on me there. I got to find a way to keep it in front. I was just talking about kind of what happened, if there was anything that we could do differently. But also it's tough, you know, it's during the game, everything's going a million miles an hour. It's tough to, you know, scrub through slow-mo video, but I'll look at it again tomorrow.
Mm. I know, Ben, look, you're a kid, man, and what?
You're right. There's no question about it. How about this? Don't walk George Springer.
Exactly. I mean, you can go back and forth. Don't give up seven runs in a first
that
inning.
That too.
I mean, man, you talk about frustrating losses. And first of all, I wanted to turn the TV off. I was watching a split screen. I wanted to get the Yankee game off, and then all of a sudden they start coming back. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be interesting.
And it was interesting.
And then I don't know, this whole Devin Williams, he starts the season, he's horrendous.
Kind of got then back a little bit?
Yeah, no, he got back a lot.
Yep.
He got back like, oh, this is the guy that we signed here. And then all of a sudden this happens. And the walk sucks, but that you know, that's a pass ball. But they called it a wild pitch.
Well, it hit the dirt first. It's not a pass ball.
I mean,
it's off the inside part of the plate.
In front of the ball. They put their body in front of it.
I don't disagree. And David Cone was saying that maybe because he's on one knee, it hurt. He couldn't slide over fast enough. You're right.
Yeah, I mean,
the
how
ball
about,
is still spiked in the dirt.
Right. I was going to say, you got a runner on third. Let's not have the ball hit the dirt. Mm-hmm. How about that? I mean, you can still throw a good pitch. You're trying to fool a guy without throwing in the dirt.
How many times have we seen relievers late in games? They dirt balls. They get balls out of the strike zone, and catchers know.
Okay,
and especially experienced catchers.
So to your point,
no. This is the problem with the Yankees. They're dealing with an inexperienced guy back there.
To your point, inexperienced guy, don't throw the ball in the dirt
with a runner on third.
With the lead runner on third, 7 minutes after you just tied the game.
I'm sorry, the pitcher is not thinking that way. The pitcher is thinking,
I suck, and I wish I was still in Milwaukee. That's what the pitcher's thinking. I mean, that guy, he is just, he looks defeated every time he takes, but even before he throws a pitch, he looks defeated.
Even Al said that. Body language doesn't look great.
Oh, you're a body language reader now,
well,
huh?
His face, he just looks like, I don't want to be out here.
Really does. It's been like that the entire year.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. We didn't watch him in Milwaukee. Was he like that? I don't know. Series finale tonight, the Yankees will try to avoid the dreaded four-game sweep.
Ooh.
Clark Schmidt taking on old Met Chris Bassett on the fan at 7:05. They have lost 6 of 9. I think it's 13 of 19. And as we mentioned, now tied atop the division. As for the Mets, in front of a gathering of friends and family in the afternoon, they wound up losing to the Brewers 7-2.
It was all the Sotos. They were able
it was
to
all
go.
The Sotos.
They were treating them to a nice day.
It was a private showing.
Private showing to the Sotos.
As part of the contract.
Invitation only.
So they lose 7-2. Now, the story in this game was obviously Carlos Mendoza taking out Clay Holmes at 90 pitches, and then Reed Garrett just imploding. He got the grand slam in that game from Joey Ortiz. So the Mets, of course, start poorly. They come back last night, though, against this fireballer, Jacob Mizorowski, the kid who was throwing 101 miles an hour. We used to talk about DeGrom throwing 90-mile-an-hour sliders. This kid throwing a 96-mile-an-hour slider. And yet a couple of guys got around on him.
Here's the first pitch. Nimmo hits it high in the air, deep to right field, down the line, near the wall. Frelick back, gone, grand slam. Brandon Nimmo, jumps all over the first pitch from Jacob Mizorowski.
Hi, I'm Howie Rose from Mets Odyssey Radio. And then you would get the back-to-back shot from Francisco Lindor. 5-0 at that point. The Mets take game two, 7-3. Here was Nimmo post-game Mets Odyssey Radio, happy to respond after that day loss.
In the first game, they were able to hit a grand slam. We were able to hit a grand slam this game. And, you know, it ended up being differences in the game. So, you know, sometimes just one pitch, sometimes it's just one moment in the game that can really dictate it up here.
Well, it did at least last night. Here was Lindor talking about Nimmo setting the tone.
I just followed whatever Nimmo did. Nimmo went out there, was aggressive, got a good pitch, and I just tried to do what he did. And actually got a credit to our starting rotation. I talked to a couple of them before the game, and they told me what to look for, and credit to them.
And you also noticed Nimmo hit in front of Lindor, who was batting in the two-hole as the DH last night. Also along the way, and that was on SNY, Lindor in the postgame talking about being... I said this to Al. How does baseball do an all-star selection show at 7 p.m. when games are starting?
Yeah, it didn't make much. I mean, I guess maybe they just wanted the announcements to happen during the broadcast is the only thing I could think of.
If that was the plan, then executed because Gary broke the news in the first inning.
And they did it with Vlad Guerrero with Toronto, too.
Kind of goofy, but whatever. Here was Lindor being selected and now going.
This is something that you can't take for granted. It's a fantastic event. We're honored and blessed to be able to be even somewhere near it. I was extremely happy and proud and ecstatic.
First time as a
Met. Bad the Yankees don't have this guy, Gleyber Torres, who's got the star for Detroit at second base.
How about not only Gleyber Torres, who's played well, how about Javi Baez?
Yeah, Javi Baez as well.
But his career was over when he left here. Yeah, how about that? So
Detroit's finale. Got three starters.
Wow. Well, the best record in baseball, mm-hmm. So.
True.
You got David Peterson, Jose Quintana tonight on Mets Odyssey Radio. In Los Angeles, the Dodgers were taking on the White Sox, who are 30 games under 500. But the point of this story was one Clayton Kershaw.
Better than 50,000 on their feet at Dodger Stadium. 1-2 pitch. Strike three called. There it is. He got him with a slider. Strikeout number 3,000 for Clayton Kershaw. History at Dodger Stadium.
Now, he didn't get the win last night, though. The Dodgers did beat the White Sox 5-4. They scored a few runs in the ninth. Freddie Freeman, the game winner in the ninth inning, game-winning RBI single. That was Dodgers radio with the call. 20th all-time in baseball with 3,000 strikeouts. Here was Kershaw getting to that magical number.
I made it interesting, for sure. Made it take too long. Honestly, didn't pitch that great tonight. Slider was so bad. But this was such a special night all the way around. It really was. Couldn't have asked for anything more, really.
So, congratulations to him. 55th win on the season for the Dodgers, who have really found
the White Sox.
Yeah, they were losing.
Yeah,
Max Muncy.
Actually, all 3,000 were against the White Sox. It's an amazing stat.
Muncy helped off the field in the sixth inning with a knee injury. We were going through.
How bad is the knee injury? Do we know?
I don't know the answer to that. No idea. But we were going through the 19 other pitchers. So I just mentioned to Al, you know, we're Cy Young in that list, and he didn't. He has 2,800. I know it's 100 years ago. You got to see the innings pitched though by this guy,
by Cy Young,
dude. 460 innings in a season.
They just threw, but they didn't throw sliders. I mean, they weren't throwing all these other.
I understand.
Freaking balls.
I don't know what they threw, but here we celebrate a guy and give him $50 million a year if they can get to 200 innings. 450. I mean, come on.
These guys routinely, all have an arsenal of like six pitches.
I know
now.
They do. I know. Well, it ain't working for a lot of them because they end up under the knife and out for a year and a half.
That's for sure.
So coming up next hour, I will try and find more reaction from the Mike Brown hiring. Also, Max Homa has quit, not social media, but quit X. We'll give you his reasons why coming up and a whole bunch more.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So, you know, Jeff Passan, who covers baseball for ESPN, and he is a newsbreaker, and he also gives his opinions because these days, you know, everybody does. You know, you see Schefter occasionally giving opinions on stuff now, too, because that's what the business wants, just not the news reporting, but how do you feel about it? And Jeff Passan was on a podcast, and he said he's sick of Yankee fans complaining, and they need to shut the F up about complaining about their team because they're always in the playoffs. Now, this is a typical guy from Kansas City. He's from Kansas City. I understand he covers baseball. He might have lived in the Northeast at some point. There is a standard, and the Yankee fan is allowed to complain if they haven't won a World Series since 2009, since they are the Yankees, and they hadn't been to one, obviously, until last year, and then it was a terrible ending for them. They're allowed to be pissed off. A lot of them now are right in the middle of their lives that grew up with the dynasty in the late 90s into the early 2000s. So that's what they grew up like. Mick Monagle, perfect example. He's in his 40s. That's what he grew up with. And it just hasn't been that way. So in this instance, well, in for sure.
In terms of championships, it's not been that way. But in terms of making the playoffs and always being in the mix when they come to October, they certainly have been.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
And maybe that's what Jeff Passan's leading to. Now, look, if he's from Kansas City, I'm assuming he's a Royals fan at heart, although he tries to be unbiased as a reporter. And you got to remember, you know, the Royals go in and out. You know, every 10 years they have a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're a small market team, they don't spend the amount of money that the Yankee fan or that the Yankees do. And the Yankees are always in the top three in terms of expenditures when it comes to player contracts. So, you know, this is why the Yankee fan has these expectations, because when you go to Yankee Stadium, it costs you an arm and a leg to go to a game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you look at the payroll, it's always up there every single year. And the Mets have been living in that world now with Steve Cohen as the owner as well. But I never, like, very rarely do I get on a fan or criticize a fan or disagree with a fan with a complaint about their team if they're passionate about it and things aren't going well.
Well, I think you also got to look at high paid players. You got to look at ticket prices. Like, this is why a lot of fans for both the Mets and the Yankees, the Jets and the Giants, end up traveling to go see their teams in different stadiums, because it's actually cheaper to do that.
Yeah,
and I just think of, like, of the Knicks fan and the Ranger fan. It is so expensive to go to one of those games. This is why we all get pissed off when, you know, it doesn't work out. I mean, like, you're basically up against the second apron. You're spending as much money as you possibly can. The tickets are expensive. And then if they make the playoffs, there's a bonus, you know, a jump on the ticket prices. Why do you think our expectations are through the roof?
Yeah.
Like, our expectations for Juan Soto through the roof.
Absolutely. And everybody knows that. No one's disagree with that. Because when he came here to build essentially Metropolitan Park and bring championships to the New York Mets. That's why he's here. And anything short of that is a disappointment.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, so the Jeff Passan take on it is, like, he doesn't get, well, he's been around baseball. He knows better than we do, probably, but we live here every single day. We're around Yankee, Met fans, Knicks fans, Ranger fans, Islander fans, you name it. We're around them all the time. So we understand the frustration of the fan bases when it comes to a lack of winning.
Well, also, I mean, the way that the Yankees have played is really frustrating to the fans. You know, the fundamental stuff, and, you know, thinking about Game 5 of the World Series last year and some of that sloppiness spilling into this year, and they feel like the manager doesn't hold them accountable. Those things, that you want to piss somebody off, piss a fan base off, it's those sloppiness or doesn't feel like you care as much or have that edge. Those are the things that are really going to get the fans upset.
I was listening to Evan and Tiki yesterday, and I don't know if you were listening to the same thing I was, but there was a caller called in. Get rid of Volpe. Get rid of this guy. Fire the hitting coach. Fire the pitching coach. Fire this coach. I mean, it was just like, fire everybody. And, you know, we're just starting July. Yeah. And again, we have to remind ourselves, as Met fans, by the way, that, you know, we were so much worse last year at this time than we are right now.
Yeah, I mean, things were starting to turn for sure, but the record had to have been worse still at this time. It had to have been still too early because it took June, let's see, 2024 Mets. But it just felt different. It felt like something was building.
What, around the Grimace, around the gay Mets, around?
Yes.
Around, oh my God, around what?
Yeah, around all that. Okay, so, all right, so when, yeah, there you go, Fleeks, thank you. So when they won their 48th game last year, they had 45 losses. That means they were three games over 500 at that point. And they're much better than that now.
Right.
So
we tend to forget where we were this time last year.
It's not how you start. It's how you finish.
Yeah, you know what?
What?
Well said.
Yeah.
I think it's, I think it's well said on your part.
Yeah, so schedule and results here. There we go. Yeah. So on Monday, that's interesting.
I'm looking at Friday, July 19th. They came back, started the second half at the Miami Marlins. They lost 6-4. They were 49-47 on July 19th.
Well, here you go. How about this? July 3rd, 1 year ago today, 42-42.
They fought all the way back to 500.
42-42, and they were 14 games back in the division. So there you go. Point taken. Well taken. Let's go to Anthony. Oh, Anthony in Belleville. What's going on, Anthony? Good morning.
Good morning, G-O-O. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's up? What's happening, brother?
What's up, fellas? Hey, y'all. It took the Yankees 4 years to figure out that Gleyber Torres wasn't a shortstop. Now, they got Jazz Jism over there at third. Why is not DJ playing third and Jism playing second? I mean, he's a second baseman.
Yeah.
And Boone's up to his same old tricks. Different lineups. I mean, come on. What are they doing?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's aggravating.
Yeah, you know, Anthony, I don't have a great answer for you. I mean, it might be something like arm strength-wise that they're worried about DJ at this point in his career playing third base, reaction time. I don't know. There's got to be.
Well, there was another error by Chisholm last night.
Yeah, I think so. But, yeah, I mean, what a tough thing for Jazz to open up when he's like, everybody knows I'm a second baseman. I don't know, you know. Then it's like, all right, so why are you playing third base? And he loves Aaron Boone, loves him. When he got thrown out of that game, we heard that clip. Hey, Skipper loves this. Skipper loves me. Skipper's got my back. Playing for the best thing about playing for the Yankees is playing for a skipper.
Yeah,
Aaron Boone.
We also heard Dalen Brunson say that about Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, well.
But where did that get him?
Yeah, but it doesn't mean they didn't like him. It just got them fired. You know,
Jalen Brunson. Yeah, I talked to my skipper already. That's all I got to do is talk to my skipper, man. My skipper believes in me, and my skipper is always gonna back me up. You know, and that's the best thing about being here, the Yankee, and having Boone as a skipper. He's always gonna have your back.
That's skipper, how I feel about Olivero.
Having him
like
as a
our
skipper.
Skipper, yeah. My skipper likes me. My skipper appreciates me. My skipper respects me. He's always got my back. My skipper.
My skipper.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna start calling him Skip, just in the hallways. Hey, Skip. Appreciate you having our back, Skip. It's the best part of being here at Odyssey is having you and WFAN is you being the skipper.